This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Welcome to this episode of Fairways and Greens. I'm your host, Gaylord Rhodes, the Vegas golf coach. And after 30 years as a golf professional, teacher, and coach, I decided it was time to share the knowledge and insights into the world of golf that I have gathered during my career as a golf professional. And joining me each episode will be a special guest from the golf industry. Together, we will discuss and share their insights, expertise, knowledge, and stories from their career and life in golf as well. Hope you enjoy this episode, and as always, I welcome and appreciate your input and suggestions for future shows, as well as your questions. So feel free to reach out and get in touch with me, the Vegas Golf Coach, by emailing me at info@golfcoachpodcast.com. That's info@golfcoachpodcast.com. Reach out and let us know what's on your mind and what you're thinking about. So let's get started with today's show. Hello, and I want to welcome everyone in to this episode of Fairways and Greens. This is episode 31, believe it or not. And when this all started almost a year ago, I just really had no idea where it was going and how it was going to turn out. And I want to thank all of my guests and all of my listeners and the guys at Line Media FM, John and Corey and Chris, an amazing operation and just amazing group of people to work with. They've been so helpful to me, and they've made this possible. And I just wanted to kind of say kudos to that and just kind of lead into today's show. This is the third segment of the Endless Journey that I put together, and it started with Are You Playing Golf or Golf Swing? And we had a nice long discussion about the difference between the golf swing and playing golf. And I think a lot of people get caught into that trap of just so focused on the golf swing that they really don't play the game at a better level. And so that was the first show. And then the second show, we kind of talked about learning a little bit of teaching concepts and how to, and kind of what to look for in an instructor and getting the most out of your coaching sessions. And then today I'm going to talk about a subject that's very dear to my heart, and I was fortunate enough to be around when in the beginning of this company, and I'm talking about Henry Griffiths. And in 1983 it officially opened, and as a company, as a club manufacturer with their own line of equipment, and it has it pioneered club fitting to the world, and it really changed how manufacturers looked at equipment, and Randy had a profound, and the company had a profound effect on equipment in general. And so to be involved in a company that pioneered club fitting, that now is the official recognized manual in the teaching manual for club fitting, the Henry Griffiths manual, that was written and put together by some amazing instructors, an amazing group of people, Randy and his family members and Ross and the company and all, and this network that I was fortunate enough to be a part of. And so as I talk to you today and you hear me say we and us, it's because we pioneered, this pioneering process brought a lot of amazing instructors out there, many of whom are some of the best instructors that I've ever worked with and seen, and not so well known, not big name, but just people that made a difference and could change motion. And because of Henry Griffiths, we had the tools and the equipment to be able to do it, and it just revolutionized teaching in a lot of ways. Because now, as a club fitter and a teacher, I had the option to really help change motion with my students and get them into a quicker balanced position and get rewarded for it with the proper equipment. And you know, for that to happen and for that all to be a part of that was a very special time in my life. And as I mentioned before, this show is really about bringing some of the old school, old knowledge back into the game. And it, you know, we talk about keeping things simple and how the golf swing, and really there's not a lot of new stuff out there. There's a lot of technology and a lot of information, but in reality, the golf swing is still the golf swing, and the game is still the game. This network of people that I got associated with that expanded into all areas of the industry and into psychology, and just some amazing people that were brought in, engineers, weight transfer machine that Randy developed, working with just the shaft manufacturers and just watching this process was an amazing deal. And I was fortunate enough to go on and to become a master fitter eventually, and a Henry Griffiths regional training director, and to be an account manager and to go out in the field and teach and work with all these great teachers and help them in their locations. And we believed in Henry Griffiths, and I'm going to say we because I'm part of this family, we believe that equipment affects motion. We also believe that only qualified, trained teaching professionals should be fitting your equipment. Professionals that understand how equipment affects motion and what the compensations that you've built into your swing, are they based on your equipment? And to be able to determine that and eliminate that, it just gives you, again, the purpose of it is, if you want to learn this game, you want to get good feedback. And if the equipment doesn't fit you or causes misdirections in ball flight as a result of being ill fit, then your feedback is not going to be fundamental. It's going to be confusing, and it's going to create this long journey through golf. And so I just wanted to open the show by kind of giving you some background. You know, it's an amazing company, and as I get into the meat and potatoes of club fitting, I'll talk about all sorts of things. And again, it was a family. It was a network of older professionals. I'm in groups now called, you know, Old School with New Tools. There's so many great groups of instructors out there, and there's so much information being exchanged. And I think there's a ground force movement, maybe, or just there's this, kind of pulling people back into simpler ways to teach golf and make it fun again and bring families in. And so, it's been a joy to watch everything shift back to that. Because when we first got involved in golf at my age, way back in the 60s, it was different. It was fun. It was kind of a family thing we did. And you know, you hung out at the golf course and you putted the old guys for dimes, and it was just a different world. And, you know, and obviously here we are in 2017, and, you know, there's a lot of information out there. And I hope to continue to bring guests on that share the knowledge that we gained over 30, 40, 20 years in this industry. And so that's kind of the purpose of Fairways and Greens, just to share the information and maybe mentor some other people and maybe help, you know, new golfers and just have some fun on the show. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and get started. Okay, so let's get into to club fitting. Okay, and I think one of the things, the key things that you need to understand is that the effects of club components on ball flight, and there's some very key elements to your ability to strike the ball correctly and get rewarded for a good swing with good ball flight. And I think when it comes to irons, and we'll get into a little bit more in detail on these components and how they affect ball flight, but when it comes to irons, lie angle is critical, and it has to be fit dynamically, not just you setting the club on the ground and having the sole flush to the ground, because when you swing a golf club, the shaft goes through all sorts of manipulation, it bows and it loads and it oscillates, and one of the beauty things about Henry Griffiths is we pure all the golf shafts, we dead weight them, and then we cut them in a special format so the frequencies are all pretty close, and then we spine or pure the shaft so that it takes all the oscillations out of it. So the club comes in the same way. And I'll get a little bit more into SST puring later, but lie angle in irons, loft in woods, and the third component I think that's a key to all of them is shaft. And shaft, there's a lot of issues with shaft. There's kick points, there's flex, there's length. All of these things are critical. So the three most, I think, the most important things I'm going to focus on are lie angle, loft, and the components of the shaft and how they all fit together. So when it comes to direction, the largest influence on direction is going to be lie angle, face angle, and head design. Okay, so for instance, when it comes to lie angle, if the club dynamically soles out in the proper position so that there's no influence of the head of the club to the right or left or toe down or heel up at impact, what that does is the plane of the face is affected by lie angle. So if the club dynamically loads with the toe down, the face is actually pointing to the right. It has nothing to do with the toe digging in the ground, although that can compound the problem. But literally, the face just points to the right when the toe's down. And if it's soled properly, the face is square to the target line, and you'll get straighter ball flight. And if the heel is, if the toe is up, the face is leaning and pointing to the left. And just for it, and so you're going to get ball flight to the left. So you could make a perfect swing and the ball would drift off to the left. And keep in mind, the more loft you have, the more lie angle affects direction. A lower lofted club is not going to be offline as more as a sand wedge or a wedge. So you definitely want your wedges dialed in with the lie angle. And I think one of the things that people don't really understand is how important it is for this to be done dynamically. So if you've gone somewhere and you've supposedly been fit by iron by somebody, just to get a mark somewhere in the center of the club doesn't necessarily mean it's a good mark, nor is one on the toe necessarily a bad mark or the heel necessarily a bad mark. It depends on what the ball's doing. So you must be able to interpret ball flight when you're checking lie angles, because there can be some a little bit toward the toe, a little bit toward the heel marks that are actually good marks based on ball flight, the direction and the path of the club and the way you swung it. So you need to have an educated club fitter analyzing your lie angles to start with. And if you've never been hit off a lie board, then whoever fit you is really not doing a job. He's basically selling you a golf club based on, oh, well, your club head speed is this, blah, blah, blah. The reality is this. Head design is a part of it. Lie angle is huge, and face angle. So they have the largest influences on direction. Then the second level on direction would be the length of the shaft, the shaft flex, and the deflection point, and the actual loft of the golf club, whether it's a wood or an iron. And then the slightest influence on direction would be the weight of the club, your grip size, and the set makeup. So when it comes to trajectory, the largest influence on trajectory is simply loft. Okay, and then, but lie angles, face angles, length, shaft, and head design have a little bit of effect on trajectory. And the slightest one would be the deflection point in the shaft, and grip size can have an effect. But centeredness of hit is huge, okay? When you're fitting shafts, the key element is centeredness of hit. Can I hit the club consistently in the center of the face? If I'm fitting someone and I'm using face tape and they're hitting it all, let's say for a driver, or three wood, and they're hitting it all over the face, high, low, heel, toe, there's probably an issue with that shaft that's not working. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, I'm not good enough to get fit because I'm a beginner, I don't have a swing. But in reality, we have one key concept when we fit at Henry Griffiths Fitters, and that's balance. If we can get you into a balanced setup and help you get into a balanced finish position and stick a club in there that allows you to finish in balance, then we can fit you. And you can, balance is the key element of evaluation. You have to have an evaluation system. And so we work with that. As it's not really teaching, but it's a concept of allowing us to give you some kind of evaluation system, the best balance you can get into, and then put golf clubs in that reward that. And you know, centeredness of hit is huge. When it comes to distance, length and loft are critical for distance, followed by lie angle, deflection point, and then maybe face angle a little bit. But feel is all about, people that are kinesthetic and feel is about shaft flex, deflection point, and the weight. Whether you want to feel the head a little bit more, so we'll put a lighter shaft in, or if you want to feel that grip a little bit more, you don't want to feel the club head, then we'll lighten up the head and weight up the shaft a little bit. There's all kinds of ways you can affect it, but those are kind of the areas that affect pretty much the different influences on ball flight. Now, the key, lie angle is a key to club fitting, okay? The lie angle of the golf club can affect both the direction and trajectory of a golf ball in flight, and I kind of mentioned how that is. If the club comes in toe down, the face is pointing to the right. If it comes in heel up, it's pointing to the left, and it has to be checked dynamically, not at static. The primary influence of lie angle is direction, okay? You know, if you're not getting that dialed in, you might as well go buy clubs off the rack, because you're not getting fit. Clubs with inaccurate lie angles are the root of many golf swing problems. I mean, you're going to stand out there, and if your clubs are too upright, and by the way, the manufacturers figured out that most amateurs slice the ball and hit it to the right. So by making clubs more upright, guess what that does? The amateur that slices it now has a club that's coming in with the heel down and the toe up, so it's influencing the ball to the left. Why? Because it helps them hit it straighter. And in drivers, they're closing the faces. Guess what? When the club comes in and you swing up and open the face, but the face is closed 3 degrees, it kind of helps straighten out the slice. So they're They're literally building compensations into the golf club so to help you with your slice that have nothing to do with your golf swing. So basically, if you start to hit that driver straight and you go for a lesson, guess what? That driver should go left. It's 3 degrees closed and way upright. The iron's the same way. So in an attempt to sell more golf clubs, they built in left into the equipment. But you buy this golf club and you're doomed to swing up to hit it straight for the time while you have those golf clubs. And so many times I see people come in for a lesson and the equipment is designed anti-slice and their golf swing doesn't change much, because if they literally got into a better impact position, the ball would go left. And they wouldn't want to see that. They would think that was a bad shot, when in reality, it was a good swing with badly fit equipment. And that's why club fitting is so important. But lie angle is primary, okay? And it must be determined dynamically when the golfer strikes a ball with his normal golf swing, okay? Whatever swing you have, we want to correct that lie angle so that now as a teacher, I can teach you how to hit the ball straight or whichever direction you want it to go in by just working on your balance motion, because the equipment now no longer plays a role and no longer creates compensations. And feedback is so fundamental to learning that if you don't get properly fit a golf equipment, then it's a crapshoot, okay? I mean, I don't care how many teachers you go to, if the club's designed to go left and you're hitting it straight, you're swinging from the inside and opening the face. That's all there is to it. And if he's working on your golf swing and you're not hitting it left at the end of it, then he's not really changing motion. He's just helping you hit the ball straight with the equipment that you have. And that's, to me, is a very futile experience. And your search for the perfect golf swing is going to go down a very strange road with badly fit equipment. Let's just leave it at that. So the true lie angle of a golf club is the angle from the center line of the shaft forms with the ground when the club is sold directly over the face center line. So what you want to do is dynamically, what that means is you want the club to come in with the sole perfectly level with the ground, with no toe up or toe down influence at impact. And if you are capable of doing, and let me tell you, be careful, because these manufacturers, I mean, our system allows us to move clubs from six down to six up. Okay, we have special alloys in the head so that we can bend them, and they actually stay in that position. It's a very soft casting that we use, and allows us to move the equipment around so that we can cover the whole spectrum of lie angles. And, you know, maybe a lot of people fall in that two flat to two upright range to around standard, and that's great. But the manufacturers, they don't offer a lot of options, and you need to make sure if you do get another manufacturer's equipment and you ask them to make them flatter or more upright, or they actually do that for you, that you check them when they come in, because it's a crapshoot. Just trust me when I tell you that. So there are two principal ways of adjusting lie angle. So you've got to keep this in mind. You can actually bend the true lie angle of the club by adjusting the lie angle by bending the head, or you can adjust it with length of the shaft. So be careful. If you're lengthening shafts, you're changing your lie angle. If you're shortening shafts, you're changing your lie angle. If you're going to maintain the same shaft length, then the obvious way to adjust lie angles is to bend the head. But you can literally change lie angle. And basically what it amounts to when it comes to shaft length is that the relationship is approximately a half a degree of lie angle to the ground for a half inch club length. So every time you increase the length of your shaft by a half inch, let's say you lengthen it, you're now increasing the lie angle up about a half a degree more upright. So if you lengthen a club an inch, you're changing the lie angle by 1 degree. And so you must be aware of this when you're looking at equipment. And the other thing that you know, when it comes to drivers, they're very upright today. And again, that's because it helps get the ball out of right field. Most of your standard, you know, off the rack drivers are fairly upright. So one of the nice things about Henry Griffiths is we can flatten the lie angles way down to 55 degrees. And I would say the industry is somewhere around 60 now. Some of them are even more upright. And I've seen that they've kind of backed it off a little bit now, because now the heads are adjustable and they can change ball flight with adjustments. So the heads they're not making the heads as upright as they used to be. And that's just my interpretation. It's been my experience, because I do still handle and get to work with all the different manufacturers' equipment. At the country club, we have multiple fitting systems along with mine, the Henry Griffith system. And so I get to go through, and I've noticed they're getting a little bit flatter now. So some of them are down around 59 degrees, but our range is from from 55 to 59, and that allows us to manipulate or change ball flight. So if your tendency is to pull the ball, we can actually flatten the lie angle a little bit and open the face a little bit and allow you to release it more and not worry about hitting it left. And most of your better players need flatter and probably more open driver heads. And better players really struggle looking at a closed driver, I can assure you of that. And they'll walk away from it because it just doesn't look right to them. So, and you've got to understand the other thing. As you lengthen the shaft, you're going to get maybe a little more dynamic loading in the shaft because it's gotten a little softer, and that could affect lie angle. So every time you make a change in length, in head design, you've got to check, because even heads are going to perform differently. Blades, are going to perform differently than a heavily bottom-weighted sole. And so as you make the club, you actually change swing weight by bending the lie angle. So, you bend the club a little flatter and you change the swing weight. You bend it upright a little more, you're going to change the swing weight. So it's going to affect the feel of the golf club to some degree. And I don't think people really understand that. And so, when you just make sure that if you're going to get fit, that you get a dynamic fit, that they're checking your lie angles at impact with your swing that you bring. And, and if you're falling backwards, a lot of the things we see in amateur golf swings are based on their attempts to really overcome badly fit equipment. If they're falling back and hitting off their back foot, all sorts of different things that we see so one of the reasons we believe teachers should be the fitters is because they understand compensating moves that equipment's. So if you don't have enough loft, if your shaft is too stiff, all these things affect your ability. In fact, my motto, well, it wasn't mine, I learned this from Randy, but one of the first things I learned as a club fitter and a teacher was that a weaker golf club builds a stronger golf swing, okay? So to take a high lofted fairway wood, for instance, a 24 degree lofted fairway wood and put a softer shaft in it and allow my student to stand up and swing to balance with that, and it's just going to build a stronger motion. If you overpower them with too little loft and a too stiff of a shaft, they're going to struggle. They're going to struggle squaring the face up. They're going to struggle getting the ball airborne. And so consequently, they're going to start trying to help it up. They're going to try to manipulate it out of right field and all those kind of things. So just be very careful when you're going in for club fitting. So, we actually patented the lie board years ago. Randy did. And it's a clear, Lexar plastic material, and he's got patents on it. We have obviously, I think, one of the best lie boards in the industry, and I use mine constantly. It's actually patented, which is kind of cool. And a lot of companies have actually violated the patent over time, but being a small company, we've kind of let it go. We've educated the industry quite a bit. Randy was such a pioneer, and it was so great to be around him. But just make sure that the hitting surface that you're going to get the lie angle on, and you're not going to really have an issue with this, but you want to make sure you're standing on an area where the hitting surface is level and the tape's applied to the sole so it's covered, and the ball needs to be placed on the lie board, and you just make a swing and then watch. You have to be able to see ball flight, because the ball goes left and the mark's on the toe, that might be a good mark, for instance, just as an example. And if it's just based on what you see, and as a teacher, what I see in the swing path and what I see with the face angle and impact, those two things are going to correlate and change the marks, could be substantially. So, to have an educated fitter fitting you that understands, and our lie angle addendum chart, which shows all the possible good lie angles, is in the PGA teaching manual, but I just don't know how many people really understand it. It took years for us to develop and understand it. A lot of great teachers worked on that with Randy. So you've got to be able to interpret the marks you see on the lie angle as well. And typically, we know pretty much I can eyeball a lie mark that matches ball flight and pretty much have a ballpark idea of this club is two degrees too upright or 2 degrees too flat. And a lot of clubs can be adjusted, to be honest with without stressing them and breaking them to a certain degree, maybe 2 degrees either way. And forged clubs, same way. I wouldn't really, if you're outside of that, an adjustment of 2 degrees, I would consider probably getting some different golf clubs. because you might stress ahead and break it off. So now we get into the club length, the shaft length. Well, the major factor determining club length is squareness of hit. That's it, simply. So if you're getting fit for a driver and they're not putting face tape on and they're not evaluating your ability to hit it in the center of the driver, then they're not really doing a very good job. They may be looking at and seeing your club head speed and matching the shaft up to your club head speed, and the loft maybe, you know, they might change the loft. I see very little, you know, there's so many options in the drivers now, and you just need to really be careful. I think most of the driver lengths are way too long for amateurs. You know, how are you going to hit it farther? Longer shaft. Well, they're advertising you're going to hit this farther than last year's model or 6 months ago's model. You know, the marketing is just incredibly, you know, deceptive. And you know, by lengthening the club to 46 inches, yeah, you can generate more club head speed, but can you hit it in the center of the face? Because centerness of hit is going to give you the most distance. And unfortunately, most of the pros are playing 44 and below inch drivers now, and the amateurs are getting sold 46, 45 and a half inch drivers, and they literally can't handle the length. So I currently play a 44 and a half inch driver. For years, you know, when we played in the old Persimmon days, 43 was length. I mean, and it was for a long time. I mean, even with the Metalwoods 43. And then all of a sudden, the 45 inch driver came out. And we were kind of one of the pioneers on length. But it was always a key, can they hit it in the center of the face? So that was really the key. I mean, there were a lot of eyeballs opened up when, and I won't mention his name, one of our senior players showed up, and one of the guys Randy was working with showed up with a 45-inch driver. It was unheard of. And, you know, he kind of got ridiculed until he started bombing it 20 yards farther. But this is a professional that can find the center of the face with that length. It's non-issue. So I think, to the betterment of most average golfers, there should be a lot of 43, 44-inch shafts available in the fitting carts, and I just don't see them. Now, you could grip down on it, but then again, how's it going to affect things? Well, when it comes to irons, it's going to affect the lie angle. It's going to affect the lie angle in drivers, too, where it's not as critical because there's very little loft, but it can also affect the grip size and your feel. So, you know, and then, obviously, you could cut it off, but they, you know, I just think it's interesting that they don't offer 43, 44, and 45-inch shafts in their driver models and for fitting, because I think it's a shame. I've really never seen anybody put face tape on, and I've gone in kind of incognito to different places to get fitting and try different equipment, and nobody's putting face tape on the driver, and that's or the irons for that matter. And, you know, length is a function of setup, but it's also a function of centerness of hit. So be very careful. Shaft length is a critical factor in club fitting. And, you know, I would suggest that you use the longest shaft that results in square hits and a balanced golf swing, okay? Longer shafts can improve squareness of hits in certain people. They can also result in off-center hits. And don't assume anything. Hit them. Try them. I mean, if you can handle length, absolutely, okay? You're going to get some more distance. But, you know, it's just, unfortunately, women are suspect to buying women's golf clubs, and they're 9 times out of 10 they're too short, they're not suitable. You know, if you're a female player and you can't reach par 4s and 2, then length is critical. You know, I want to get them as long as I can to give them the ability, as long as they can centerness of hit. And honestly, you know, a 5'10" woman, you know, most of the mass produced golf clubs are designed for 5'6" and 7" inch tall women, which is the average size, and you get a tall woman in there and she's gonna really struggle, and so they'll lead her maybe to senior clubs, men's senior clubs. See, the nice thing about Henry Griffiths is we don't have senior clubs or women's, we just have golf clubs. We fit you as an individual, not required to have some kind of a model to work off of, because we have links all over the map. We have heavy and light graphite in the same flex. We have probably 3,000 options in our fitting cart, and it gives us the ability to really dial in your equipment. And not only that, but we manufacture them to the highest tolerances. All the head weights match in a perfect weighted scale. All the shafts are dead weighted. The grips are dead weighted. Everything's assembled. The shafts are pured. So we sweet spot the shafts, would be a simple way to describe it. So they come in, and the head comes in the same position every time. You know, you can get an out-of-orientated shaft or load a shaft, and it's going to bow down and shut and close, and it can come in a variety of different positions, you know. So if, for instance, you have one club in the bag that you really like, and you're comfortable with it, it's probably, the shaft is probably lined up pretty well. And then say you have another club that you just hit it all over the map, you can't, it could just be the shaft is coming in and the spine's off center and it's loading funny and it's coming in shut one time, open one time, toe down, heel up, you never know. So getting your shafts pured is a huge thing, and there's no OEMs that do that. I mean, you have to do it aftermarket, and it's pretty expensive. It's built into Henry Griffiths, by the way. We do it to every club. So, you know, you're a tall guy, you're a short guy, you're a tall woman, you're a short woman. Everybody's different and everybody's unique, and you want to be able to get fit in a system that has things. And so let's talk a little bit about shafts. So there's really, you know, one manufacturer's stiff and one manufacturer's regular are rarely the same. The graphite shafts now out there, the tolerances are getting tighter, they're getting better. They're understanding the importance of taking the oscillations out of them. So, that, you know, there's things are getting better. There's no question about it. So shaft stiffness or flex is a measure of how much the staff bends when you put it under a force load, okay? So, I mean, obviously the most accurate method for determining shaft frequency is in cycles per minute, CPM. So when you're looking at shafts, all of our shafts are frequencies are rated. So I know I can pick up a shaft out of my fitting system. It tells me exactly what it is. And if it's a little tiny bit too stiff or a little bit too weak, I can have Grant in production pull out one that's a little heavier, which would make it a tiny bit stiffer, or one that's a little lighter. So in that same shaft, we have a heavy and a light version of it, which gives us three options around that frequency for that flex. Maybe it's a shaft that loads at 65 miles an hour, and I can put a heavier in it, it might be closer to 70. Put a lighter in, it might be closer to 60 when it loads. And so it gives me options in every frequency range, so to speak. So that, for instance, I have 3 R's instead of 1 R. And actually, I have probably 7 or 8 or 9 R's, but that's a different story. But then the second thing you want to look at is the deflection point, or the kick point of the shaft, and that's where the maximum bend occurs in the shaft. And so, you know, torque is also another issue now we're dealing with. I like a softer shaft that bends, you know, it loads a little bit, but I want the torque, the tip, to be stiff. And so they can do that now. Graphite is so cool that you can get low torque, regular shafts, senior, I mean, you can do all kinds of things. And our company's experimented around with torque and flex and bend points, and so we have tons of options. And it can really make a difference. I mean, you know, if the shaft stiffness is accurate for the student, then athletic balance of the golfer will be enhanced. You'll be able to make a stronger, better move, okay? And the sound and impact. And see, I'm very auditory, and we didn't have launch monitors and, you know, video and all this stuff when I started fitting back in 1989. And so what I always listened to was centeredness of hit by using face tape and the sound of the ball coming off the face when you hit it in the center. I know that the shaft is probably really good because I hear that explosion off the face, that sound, you know. So the sound and impact will be crisp, and there'll be less difference between solid hits and misses. And when you get a shaft that's a little too stiff, or, you know, you can tell that it just sounds kind of dull, would be a way to describe it. So being very auditory and feel oriented, you know, I'm listening to the sound of the ball when I'm fitting my students. I'm listening to the sound coming off, and I know some of you are auditory and you can relate to that. It's almost like you hit it and it just the sound is just so good. And so we have tons of options for that. And so deflection points, there's low kick points. A low kick point, you know, potentially he's going to have a little bit of a tipper, a weaker tip, and it's going to shoot the ball up in the air. So if you're having trouble getting the ball up, you definitely want a low kick shaft, okay? You want something that'll shoot the ball a little higher, get a little bit of better trajectory. A mid kick point is going to be kind of a neutral. It's gonna loft it a little bit lower, and you know it's good for people that may want to that play in a lot of wind. But really, the high kick points, the tips are the stiffest. So if you really fight, you're hitting it too high, get a low torque stiff tip shaft, and it'll lower your ball flight. Okay. And so that's kind of a basic of shaft. Frequency is important because it represents flex. And frequency, literally, a lighter shaft is going to be softer than a heavier shaft. So, you know, if you need to pay attention to the weight of the shafts you're looking at. And they can make a stiff, light shaft now because graphite's phenomenal. And they can make a soft, heavy shaft as well to some degree. But it's limited by weight. Weight is going to affect basically flex. So it's hard to get a real soft senior shaft that weighs a lot. It just doesn't work because weight is going to be a function of heaviness. So, and it's going to affect it. So, you know, the optimum loft angle for a club is the one that provides you with the best combination of trajectory and direction. So, particularly when it comes, loft is a major factor influencing the trajectory at which the ball leaves the club face. So, it has a profound effect on the motion and the athletic motion a person can obtain during the golf swing. If you have too little loft, for instance, in your driver, the only way to increase the loft of the driver is to hang back and swing up, which destroys balance, okay? So too little loft is one of the biggest killers of golf swings. Trust me when I tell you that. I can't tell you how many students come in with that 9-degree driver, and man, they're swinging up on it, and you don't swing up with your rest of your golf club. So you basically are doomed to create a swing around the driver, and then when you try that swing with the irons, it doesn't work. You're bottoming out early, you're bouncing it off the ground, you're catching it thin, you're missing it to the right. It just compounds so many issues in golf. And, you know, to a degree, the lofts in your irons can affect a little bit of motion, but mostly in the woods and the drivers in particular. That's why a lot of people hit their three woods better than their drivers and as far as their driver, because the loft is correct and they make a better, more athletic motion at it, and it's more comfortable for them. So launch angle, the launch angle of the ball is, and the ball trajectory that you see is determined by obviously the loft angle. Lie angle can play a role in it. Flatter clubs have a tendency to launch a little lower and to the right, and more upright clubs have a tendency to launch higher. And also the hosel designs, and I'll get into that a little bit in head design, but loft angles are critical. So let's talk about head design. So head design, the shape and style of the head, whether it's offset or non-offset, a deep face, a shallow face, oversized, traditional, has a more bottom weighting or thinner bottom line, all of those things affect ball flight. Okay, so typically the influence of head design on ball flight. So if you have a non-offset, more of a blade players type club compared to an offset, the non-offset club is going to have more of an influence on a little bit, possibly lower, depending on the sole design. You can have a non-offset, bottom weighted, lower center of gravity iron head today in particular, because they know most people can't get it up in the air, so they can make a non-offset head that'll get the ball higher. But traditionally, a blade style club with non-offset is going to influence the ball more to the right and lower, okay? That's basically the basic idea behind a non-offset blade, okay? So now you have a non-offset, low center of gravity, with the cavity back and all kinds of... So you can get a non-offset club that you can launch higher now. I've always been a high ball flight guy, so I've always used blades, non-offset blades, because my miss is to the left. And so for me, I'm always looking for a non-offset iron. We have in our set, we have a non-offset blade. We also have a oversized neutral, what we call a neutral club, that doesn't influence it right or left, but does hit it a little higher. And then we have our offset iron heads. And compared to a non-offset blade, the design influence on an offset iron is to get the ball flight more to the left and possibly higher, and most definitely higher today. The offset irons out there are designed for that. They're designed to get the ball out of right field, as we've mentioned, and they're also designed to hit the ball a little bit higher. So if you struggle with trajectory, if you hit it too high, you might consider going to a non-offset club. If you hit it too low, have trouble getting in the air, you want to look at an offset club with a little more lower center of gravity in it, okay? And so that's basically head design. So now we get into weight and swing weight. So you got to understand, there are 14 components in a golf club that you should be aware of, okay? And I'm going through them today, one by one. So weight and swing weight, okay? So let's define total weight, dead weight, okay? This is the weight of the assembled golf club. It's the total weight of the golf. Swing weight is the relationship of a grip, shaft, and head at a specified fulcrum point, okay? So I'm going to tell you the difference. Total weight is a club fitter's tool, okay? At Henry Griffiths, our manufacturing tolerances uses the manufacturing tolerances and the resulting range of component weights to obtain a greater variety and range of building golf clubs to meet individual requirements. So we are able to offer weights ranging from light to medium to heavy in each one of our components. Light heads, heavy heads, medium heads. Light shafts, heavy heads. Heavy shafts, medium weighted shafts. And we have the same with grips. Light grips, heavy grips, medium grips. And so we can put all these things in combination. So if you want to feel the head more, we put a heavier head, lighter shaft, lighter grip. Want to feel the hands more, the grip more, we put lighter head, heavier shaft, heavier grip. So all components in the fitting system, in our fitting system that we fit with, are medium. But if the player wants to feel the head more, we have an option. If he wants to not feel the head more, we have an option. So that's the cool thing about components in our system. So total weight is a club fitter's tool. So we work off total weight and we design the club for the feel that you want. Swing weight is a club maker's tool, okay? It, you know, a lot of the companies say, well, I want all my swing weights D6. Well, guess what? You can have a 100-pound club that is a D6 swing weight. Could you swing it? Absolutely not. So for me, swing weight's irrelevant. If all my total dead weights are the same, my swing weights are going to be the same. I want to know, as a club fitter, I want to know if you want to feel the head more or you not. If you want, you know, and so when I put a light shaft and a heavy head on, they immediately feel like the club is heavy. When I put a lighter head and a heavier shaft on, the club feels lighter. Even though the dead weight of the club is heavier, it feels lighter. So be careful with swing weight, okay? It's way overrated. I mean, I could literally pour, if I counterbalance the club, I could have a 100-pound club that has swing weight of D6. And I can also have a 150-gram club that has a swing weight of D6 by just putting a heavy head on it, okay? So, you know, you just have to be aware that swing weight, if you manufacture the club and your tolerances are within half a gram, all the heads follow a scale of a half a gram apart, all the shafts are less than a half a gram apart, and all your grips are less than a half a gram apart, you're going to have a complete set of matched, frequency-matched, dead-weighted golf clubs, particularly if you know how to cut shafts the way. So we don't just cut them off the butt, okay, like most manufacturers. Guess think about that. You've got a blank shaft that's, say, 40 inches long. It's an iron shaft. And you cut it down to 36 inches for your 8 iron. So you just cut off, you know, basically 4 inches off the butt of the club. That club's going to be stiffer. Now, you go to your 4 iron and you cut 1 inch off. That club's going to be weaker. It's going to have more bend. It's going to have a lower frequency. It's going to be not as stiff. And yet you swing the 4 iron faster. How does that work for you? You got an 8 iron that's a telephone pole, and you got a 4 iron that's whippy, and you're trying to make the same swing with both golf clubs? See, that was one of the issues back in the day, and that's one of the things that Henry Griffiths solved. And we cut from both ends, so the frequencies are much closer, so they all feel the same. And they react similarly, and the lie angles are more consistent that way. I mean, the 4 iron's going to bow more. If you can swing 100 miles an hour with the 4 iron, it's going to load a hell of a lot more than the 8 iron is, and that's going to affect lie angle. So by doing what we do, we can effectively get the lie angles correct in all the golf clubs, and that's a huge factor. And so just be aware that swing weight is not as important as the total club weight and how the club is manufactured and how it's put together. And that's just my story on swing weight. So grip's important for a couple reasons. It's the only physical contact you have with the golf club, and they can either enhance or detract from how you feel about a particular club. So, and one thing I would always recommend is if you're using standard, you know, golf pride grips. I mean, we use Pure grips now, which last extremely long time. I still change mine every year, but I used to change my grips about every 3 months because I practice and play a lot of golf. And, you know, if you're a weekend player, I would suggest, you know, and you practice a lot, I would suggest about every 6 months. And the nice thing is when you put a new grip on, it feels like you got a new golf club, okay? And it's just because that you're it's a tactile thing with me. And with the Pure grips, I'm just blown away at how long they last and how long they retain that, you know, good club feel. And so I'm about a year now. And we use them, you know, we recommend them because we know they're going to last at least a year. And we know our students are pretty notoriously bad about changing grips because when they come in with their clubs, most of the grips are worn out, particularly here in the desert. They leave them in the trunk. They're baked. They're cracking. They're slick. I mean, it's crazy what you see with grips. So, you know, I think grips, they basically, the size is basically going to affect your ability to release or not release the golf club. So, and I think some of that is, it's very, very true. I mean, grips and grip size can help or hinder a golfer's hand movement through impact. So if basically you want to select a grip size that feels comfortable to you, that allows you to benefit your release in the golf club. So, you know, if you over-release and you tend to shut the face down, you know, having a little larger grip that still feels comfortable and still fits properly in your hands, you want to get the biggest grip you can. You don't want to overdo it and make it a baseball bat, but you typically want to get, And let's say you have trouble releasing. Well, you don't want to maximize the grip size because it's going to restrict hand movement a little bit. And that's kind of the theory behind grips. So, you know, most of you that are better players already have a grip size you're comfortable with. If you have arthritis, obviously, you don't want the fingertips digging into the palm. The grip's too small. And if they're separated from the heel portion of the palm, they're probably too large. But then again, it's all about preference. You know, and that's really kind of the deal with grips. So we've pretty much covered everything that I think is important. You know, set makeup is hugely important, and getting the right, you know, gaps in your clubs is important. In wedges in particular, and wedges is a whole nother story, and we'll talk about that because there's so much involved now in wedges, and getting a proper wedge fit and proper wedge grind is so important in clubs. But, you know, the thing is as being a teacher for so long and having students come in with badly fit equipment, you begin to pick up the compensations, and I'm pretty good at them now. I mean, when you have bad shafts, for instance, you know, you get some real funny grips a lot of times. You get really exaggerated club pass. You kind of get the alignment kind of left. I mean, they're struggling trying to, you know, release the club. They use their hands too much. The right shoulder's under an impact, and they're finishing high, and they really struggle. I mean, these are just simple things that I see. So, you know, I highly recommend that when next time you're ready to get golf clubs, or let's say this has encouraged you to go out and get a proper fit. So a lot of times the equipment you have can be adjusted properly to help you. A lot of my students come in and their equipment's close. There's just maybe the driver's a little off, or the iron lie angles are bad, and so we can adjust those and get them dialed in. But the shaft is good, the length is good, but the you know, there's an oscillation problem in some of the clubs, and possibly because they're not pured. But other than that, you can get the lie angles corrected in most golf clubs, particularly if you're a pretty much average sized person, somewhere between say 5'8" and 6 foot for a guy. There's a lot of, you know, we don't see a lot of variations. There are, however, very unique golf swings that. So lie angles are affected by the way you release your hands through the golf swing, and once you've developed a pattern with your motion, a lot of times the hands are going to either go up a little bit with centrifugal force or drop a little bit coming in, and the guys that drop them a little bit are probably going to need flatter lie angles, and the guys that raise them up a little bit, like myself, are going to need more upright lie angles. And so those are very simple things to pick up on when golfers come in, and you know, you just want to make sure that wherever you go to get fit, and I highly recommend going to henrygriffiths.com and finding a fitter in your area and go and experiencing that once. You know, there's still quite a few of us out there that still believe in and that know how to fit, and it doesn't matter what clubs they're fitting you on. If that guy is a fitter, he's going to be able to help you with any equipment that you have. And if you're going to a teacher and he's not evaluating your equipment, run away. Because he's taking your money. He's going to basically help you with a swing that's only going to work with the clubs you have. And if those clubs don't work, guess what? Your feedback's going to be really, really crappy. And it's going to prolong your process. I mean, you know, basically, it's just a function of being smart, being educated, understanding it. And if you're, you know, new to the game, and you're using like equipment you bought on Craigslist or something, you know, it's time to go get properly fit golf clubs. And you know, does my equipment reward my best balance motion? And I'm going to close with that, because balance is the key evaluation that I use in fitting golf clubs. Is it rewarding your motion? Are your clubs rewarding you and giving you good feedback, or are they causing compensations and confusing your feedback? Okay, it's your golf swing. It's your motion we're trying to develop. And if I don't neutralize the equipment, you're going to be doomed to that golf swing that works with that golf club. And I promise you, you know, if I'm trying to help you with your one or two aspects of your golf swing to help you get better, and I'm not looking at your equipment, I'm cheating you. And so with that, I want to welcome and thank everyone for listening in. This is just kind of a milestone for me. I never knew if I was going to make it this far. I want to thank all my listeners and everybody that downloads my podcast. And just thank you for being with me for this year. And stay tuned, because we're just going to have a blast on this show talking golf. For that, I'm going to say adios and fairways and greens. Well, folks, It's time to say goodbye to this episode of Fairways and Greens. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if you would like to subscribe to the show, just head over to golfcoachpodcast.com. That's www.golfcoachpodcast.com. And don't forget to reach out with your questions and your input on the show to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. So reach out with your questions and anything you'd like to add or any suggestion on future shows to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. And you can find me, the Vegas Golf Coach, and a link to my blogs, coaching centers, and programs at www.vegasgolfcoach.com. That's www.vegasgolfcoach.com. So goodbye for now, and here's to finding your share of fairways and greens in your journey through life and golf.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.